Come on in, pull up a seat at the bar, and as always, at the Bidon, the first round is on us. As we move into the period between the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France, we have the Dauphiné kicking off this weekend, and frankly, none of us are ready. After an explosive finale to the Giro last weekend, I am your landlord and your quizmaster, Tom, and I am joined by my lovely cast of regulars. We have Anna.
Hi.
Katie.
Hello.
And Dan.
Hello.
And as always, we start by getting the drinks in. Let's go with you, Anna. What are you having today?
Well, I'm still mourning the loss of the Giro, so I'll be having a nice glass of limoncello, please.
Ooh, very nice, very nice. And Dan, what can I get for you?
I'm having a pint of ale from the Oak Hills Brewery on the Isle of Man. It's a 4.8% porter and has smoky aromas of licorice and coffee. The word Isle, spelt A-I-L-E, means fire in Manx Gaelic. Nothing could be more appropriate to celebrate Mark Cavendish's 70th win at the Giro in Rome on Sunday.
Nice.
Tones of licorice. I'm not sure I would be a fan. I'm not a big licorice fan. That wouldn't be for me.
No. Well, it's got coffee in it, so I will like it.
And Katie, what am I getting for you?
I would like a cider of Normandy, please. So, cidre de Normandy, because, I'll tell you why, we have just had the fabulous and much underrated Boucle de la Mayenne stage race, which is quite close to the Normandy region. It's about the closest region that I've found to drink itself, if that makes sense. And anyway, the link here is that Arnaud Démare won a stage and he won the green jersey there, the green sprint jersey. And it just got me all excited for the Tour de France. So yes, I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but have you seen the sprinters that are rumoured to be lining up this year at the Tour?
I will also be having a cider, but I am celebrating the return of Landismo this weekend, obviously, with Mikel Landa launching his preparation for his assault on the general classification of the Tour de France. So I will be having a Cupella cider, which is a cider from just outside San Sebastian in the Basque region. Very nice indeed. So after the drinks, I suppose we can go straight into the pub quiz, can't we? Straight into the quiz.
I do love this quiz.
I am so ready.
So looking at the scores from last week, we currently have Katie in the lead with 5 points and Anna and Dan tied in second on 4 points apiece. I wonder what will happen.
All to play for.
All right, so we'll go straight into question one. Question one, Primoz Roglic won his first Giro d'Italia and completed Jumbo-Visma's collection of Grand Tour jerseys, taking the pink jersey on the penultimate day time trial. Roglic to date has won 8 of the 15 World Tour stage races, including the Grand Tours. Can you name any of the 7 he has yet to win? A point for each correct answer.
So let's just say that again. He's won 8 and has 7 left to win. Is that right?
So we've got to name 7 tours.
7.
Well, you can name up to 7.
Well, it'd be silly not to.
If you can think of 7.
So yeah.
He's
won 8.
Point for each one you name.
Well, it'd be silly not to try to name 7 then, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah.
There is quite a big obvious one, but he hasn't won. Question 2. Derek G, the Canadian birdwatching cyclist sensation of Israel Premier Tech, was everyone's favourite underdog, finishing second on 3 stages and in virtually every classification available at the Giro. He isn't the first Canadian to make an impression on the Italian race, however, with a Canadian previously taking the win in the general classification. Name the rider and the year.
Oh, God, not the year.
So 2 points available in this question.
Yes.
I feel like Sue Barker for a question of sport when I do this.
Yeah, you do sound like that.
Question number 3. Trek Segafredo announced that from June 30th they will henceforth be known as Lidl Trek, and cycling Twitter was salivating at the prospect of an exciting kit, with the announcement including a colourful checkerboard design. This isn't Lidl's first venture into cycling sponsorship, however. Whose kit did they adorn from 2016 to 2021? There was many a publicity shoot inside supermarkets before the Tour de France with this team, I believe.
I think I've got the right answer.
I've got an idea, but I don't remember.
Question four. The Dauphiné kicks off on Sunday and is often seen as a key indicator of form a month ahead of the Tour de France. But how key is it? How often in the last 10 editions has the Dauphiné winner gone on to win the Tour de France?
That's a question. Ooh. Like it. I like that. Mm.
So it's a number out of 10.
Just a number out of 10.
I thought when you said how important is it, I was going to say like 75%.
Oh, that's really tough.
That's really tough.
That's a point. Who did win the Dauphiné? I'll just remember it's fine.
Yeah. And he didn't win the tour, so that takes it down to at least 9.
That is correct.
Good logic.
He did not win last. He did not win the tour.
No.
Question number 5. This year's Giro finished in Rome with Roglic's winning margin of only 14 seconds over second place man Geraint Thomas. Armed with this knowledge, this leads us nicely onto our latest round of higher and lower. So like last time, we'll mark as we go along. So tell me, in 2022, did Jai Hindley beat Richard Carapaz to Giro glory by a higher or lower margin than 14 seconds? Let's go with Katie, because you're the top of my list.
Higher.
Anna?
I'm also saying higher.
And Dan?
Higher.
That is correct. He beat second place man by 1 minute and 18 seconds. Moving on to 2021, Egan Bernal won his second Grand Tour ahead of the Italian Damian Caruso with the final stage in Milan. But was Bernal's margin higher or lower than Hindley's 1:18? Let's go to Dan first this time.
Higher.
Anna?
Higher.
And Katie?
Higher.
All correct again. Yeah. He won by 1 minute and 29 seconds.
Oh, only 10 seconds.
Now, in the post-COVID 2020 Giro, Theo Gegenhardt and Jai Hindley were on the same time following the final mountain stage and headed into the final TT in Milan, as close as they could possibly be. We know, of course, Theo went on to win, but by how big of a margin was it? And was it higher or lower than Bernal's 1 minute and 29 seconds the following year? Anna, what do you think?
Oh, I'm just going to say lower.
Katie?
Lower.
Dan?
Lower.
All correct again. It was a winning margin of 39 seconds.
It's getting tense now, isn't it?
Moving on to 2019, and it was the Roman Amphitheatre in Verona was the setting for Richard Carapaz becoming the first Ecuadorian Grand Tour winner, beating Italian legend Vincenzo Nibali. However, how much was his winning margin, and was it higher or lower than 39 seconds, Dan?
Higher.
Katie.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go higher as well.
Anna.
I've also gone higher.
And you're all correct again. It was 1 minute and 5 seconds.
Time.
Now, finally, the last question of this round, the 2018 Giro, with Chris Froome completing his Grand Tour trilogy and to date his last Grand Tour victory, edging out the then defending champion Tom Dumoulin. But how much did he win by? Was it higher or lower than 1 minute and 5 seconds, Katie?
Higher.
Anna?
Higher.
Dan?
Higher.
I'm afraid you're all wrong. It was lower. It was...
Oh,
it was only
nice.
46 seconds that Chris Froome won. So moving back into the other questions, everybody is on 4 points because this time I've got a pen and paper. Back to question number one and the World Tour races that Primoz Roglic didn't win. So I am going to list them and I would want you to be honest with me and tell me how many you got. All right? The Tour Down Under.
Yep.
The Volta Catalunya.
Oh.
The Tour de Suisse.
Yay!
The Tour de France.
Yay!
The Tour de Poland. Tour of Poland. The newly named Renwati Tour. It was
what?
The...
What?
It was the Binko Banko Boxy Tour.
Binko Banko.
It was the Binko Banko Tour. And the very world famous, challenging... end of season World Tour race, the Gree Tour of Jiangxi. The Chinese one.
I knew it. I told you it'd be somewhere random, like somewhere completely unconnected to the rest of the world tour team, races, whatever.
Well, I got three.
So Anna got three. Katie?
I think I got four. Did you say UAE? Had he won UAE?
No, he won UAE.
Oh, I've got UAE'd, yeah.
One, two, three, four. And Dan?
Yeah, I got four as well.
One, two, three, four. Excellent. So we have Katie and Dan on 8 points and Anna on seven. Question two. This was the Canadian winner of the Giro d'Italia after Derek G's sensational Giro this year. Let's go with Katie. Who was the rider and when did they win?
I think it was rider Hez Jadal. And I think, I don't really know the year. I'm not very good at years. So I'm going 2004.
Okay, Anna, who have you got down?
I'm not even sure my guy's Canadian. So that's a good start. I definitely know he didn't win. I've got Hugo Hull. Is he Canadian?
He's Canadian. He didn't win the Giro, though.
No, I didn't think he did. But I was just desperate to name someone that's actually Canadian. So I'm going to
still got that.
So well done.
Win.
2007.
And finally, Dan.
So I know it's Ryder Heijerdahl, and I think it's 2012.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
It is Ryder Heijerdahl, and it is 2012.
Well done, Dan.
Gosh.
Correct.
Hey!
So Dan's snuck into the lead now. 10 nice. Points. Katie's on 9 points, and Anna is still on 7 points.
7 is a great number, though. Let's not forget that.
Great number. So back to question number 3. This was... after the announcement of Lidl Trek from the end of the month, we have the team that had them on their jersey prior to this. So, Anna, who did you put down?
Well, I put down Quickstep as the possible sensible answer, but I think they should have been called the Lidl All-Star Victory Makers, and I think they've missed out by not calling their team that, to be fair.
I mean, you could suggest it to Trek.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd be open to that.
I think we should rename. I think this whole sponsorship thing is nice, but we should go for more like, the Warriors and, the
Lidl like All-Star. All American teams.
The Lidl All-Star Victory Makers. I mean, those guys would win everything because they are victory makers. So, yeah.
I mean, it worked for Bahrain.
Exactly. Yeah.
Katie, what have you put?
I put Quickstep.
Dan?
Yeah, Quickstep.
And it was Quickstep. I remember very precisely an interview before the Tour de France with Julian Alaphilippe, just like in the aisle at Lidl, like holding some peppers. It was just like, what?
Well, those guys are there, aren't they?
Question number 4. This was the Dauphiné and how key of an indicator it is for Tour de France victory. So how many of the last 10 editions winners of the Dauphiné have gone on to win the Tour de France? I'll go with Dan first. Why not?
I'm just going to go with Sky stuff, so I think it's 6.
Katie?
I put 5. It's a bit of a guess.
And Anna?
I went for 4.
The answer is 4.
Oh!
Woohoo!
So you were right with going with Sky stuff, Dan, but you went too high. So the last winners of the Dauphiné that went on to win the Tour de France are Chris Froome in 2013, 2015 and 2016, and Geraint Thomas in 2018. So for the past 5 editions, the winner of the Dauphiné has not gone on to win the Tour de France. So maybe that tells you something about how good of an indicator it is. Should we have a quick chat about build-up to the Tour then? Because obviously that kind of proves that recently the Dauphiné has seemingly become far less important in the build-up to the Tour. And Pogacar, he stays away from it completely. He's done the Tour of Slovenia the past couple of years. Is the build-up to the Tour changing, or how people prepare for a big race changing, or is it just trends change over time?
Well, Vingegaard keeps it very classic in the term of the way, like the way Froome used to do it, where he's got his goals and he does the build up to them, and it's very formulaic, not in a bad way, but it's just formulaic. And then you've got Pogacar, who's just firing around, doing whatever, and obviously had his crash at the age. But it will be interesting, because Vingegaard's going into the Dauphiné as, you know, massive favourite. He should win it. It'll probably be a surprise if he doesn't, even though he said it's not a goal. And then you've got Pogacar doing just the Slovenian National Championships TT and road race 2 days before the tour starts. So it's all a bit... I mean, he won't be worried about it, I'm sure, but it might not be ideal preparation.
Yeah, I think we've had that in the last couple of years, haven't we? Like, it's a perception of the favourites avoiding each other. There was that the year before last, which was the build as Pog v Rog 2021, when they did opposite races and they avoided each other, like, for the last sort of run-in. And I don't know, there was all this talk about, oh, is it because they don't want to, you know, get in each other's heads, or they want to stay out of each other's heads, or what? And then last year, Pog just didn't bother doing the Dauphiné again, and that was, you know, he, like you say, he just seems to be happy to just do his own thing. Does it then put more pressure on the other favourite, as it were? Like, so if Vingegaard doesn't win this, is that going to be seen as a, you know, a big issue, or is he just going to walk away with it? What do you guys think? I don't know.
With the time trial, Vingegaard, you know, I don't think there's anybody. I mean, Danny Martinez, maybe. There's very few. I mean, he could just ride a time trial, win that, and then he's won the race, basically, because he's just got to follow in the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you said he didn't say it was a goal, but apparently he has said he wants to win it this week, which is apparently quite big fighting talk from him, in the sense that he's normally very understated about his goals. And so I think the fact that he's actually come out and said he wants to win it basically means that he's going to win it, unless, you know, barring accident or incident.
What I almost find more interesting is the fight, the fight below. So the potential fight for third, but can also potentially influence one and two. Because Jumbo's squad for the tour is not climbing heavy. You've got Kruiswijk and Kuss as domestiques, and that, obviously, well, Van Aert can do everything. But it's very high mountains light. And obviously, Roglic is not going to the tour, and that just opens it up for someone else to go mano a mano. You know, you've got Godu, whatever Ineos send. It should be really exciting.
We've also got Hindley as well. I was going to say, that's an interesting
Adam Yates was
a battle, essentially. I think this will be this will be a good indicator in terms of where Hindley stacks up against the real big GC guys. While he did it amazingly last year at the Giro, the argument is that the biggest GC guys are at the Tour.
Well, yeah, the Tour is the A race. Yeah, exactly. That's the one the whole world is watching, in effect.
So I think it would be a good indicator of where Hindley sits in that hierarchy, I suppose.
Intrigued to see how Max Poole from Team DSM goes as well. He's been like astoundingly close to some of the big favourites in the recent stage races that he's been involved in. So that's a sort of an outside shout for maybe the top five.
And with that, we come to the conclusion of the quiz this week. In first place with 11 points is Dan. Well done, Dan.
In a row.
Katie, you were second with 10 points.
Solid.
And Anna, you were following up just behind with 9 points in third place.
Also respectful number 9. Close.
So, if we tot up the scores overall, we have Anna currently on 5 points, but joint leaders Katie and Dan on 7 points apiece.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this scoring system seems sus to me.
Right, so, well, my glass is empty, so whose round is it?
I'll get this one in. I would like to talk about the Giro d'Italia. Obviously, we've just finished, it's been a few days now. We've had some time to sit back and reflect on it. And I think it's safe to say it's probably one of the most memorable Giros, maybe not always for the right reasons, but certainly finished with a bang. What do you guys think?
Well, let's do our scores. How many pints out of 10 would you rate this Giro? I'm going to go first. For me, it was a 4 pinter. 4 pints out of 10. Dan?
I'm tempted to say 4 as well, but I'll be different and say 5 out of 10.
Katie?
I might be guilty of recency bias a little bit here. I think maybe if I look back on it in a few years' time and rate it against some of the other Giros that we've had, I might be a bit more frugal. But I'm tempted to give it 6 pints because I think it had a lot. It was really bad in lots of ways, with the illness and the weather. But it just threw up so many interesting stories. We learned about so many new riders. And the finish, the end, the storylines that came together right at the end were so perfect. You just couldn't have made it up. Roglic's redemption, G leading out Cav for his final ever stage. It was just that crescendo at the end and that super time trial, which was just so amazing to see and so different and joyous at times and also incredibly exciting. I just think it made up for anything that was missing the previous 2 weeks. And yeah, anyway, so I'm giving it 6, probably even 7 now because I'm just talking myself into even higher scores. But I'll stick with 6 for logic.
Yeah, what about you, Anna? How many pints?
Yeah, see, I was going to say 6 for pretty much the same reasons, although it broke my heart on numerous days. We did have an official we cry at 8 over the Giro because of people falling out because of illness and all those kinds of things. Again, those final few stages were just something else, weren't they? And watching people like Skins and Derek G fighting for their break all the time. And then, yeah, that final time trial up that mountain, that was phenomenal. So, yeah, that really sort of ramped up the score at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. Those final 2 days were brilliantly entertaining, and they are probably most of the reason why I gave it 4 out of 10. But the thing that really dragged it down for me was that whole second week where virtually nothing happened.
G happened, then nothing else happened.
But yeah, but I couldn't really watch anything live during the second week, and you basically could get all the stories from watching the final few kilometres of each stage every day, and that's what I did, and I followed the whole second week. It wasn't a particularly exciting second week. The first week had a couple of moments for me, and obviously the last 2 days were brilliant, but just overall, I think it was a pretty poor Giro. Dan, I think we glossed over your reasoning as well.
I mean, I try to be positive about it because generally it's cycling, it's good. But that last mountain stage, it was like waiting all day. It was like the Queen stage, waiting all day for something to happen. And then all it was Roglic attacking for 300 metres, and then G pulled him up. And it was... it wasn't the spectacle that it was kind of billed to be, and potentially it was too backloaded. So... But no, like, I mean, I caught up on the TT in the evening, having stayed away from all internet. And that it was spectacular to watch. It was absolutely fantastic. It's just really unfortunate that it was like a TV show where 3 seasons were really boring, and then it all explodes at the end. And you go, well, that was really great, but the bit before was really boring. So that's kind of my feeling about it.
Well, we know what that noise means. It means it's last orders at the bar. Has anybody got anything else before we leave?
Yeah, I do actually. I'm just wondering if anyone's got any recommendations for any pairings to go with some French beef. Having seen recently the issues that Gadou has been having with his teammates, namely Pinot this time, following his previous disagreements with Demar earlier in the year. So, yeah, anything to go with the Gadou beauf?
Le beauf de
Gadou? Le beauf de
Gadou. What do you suggest, barman? I mean, nice red wine?
I mean, you can't go wrong with a good, like, Cabernet Sauvignon, can you? You know, a nice red.
Are we suggesting that maybe if Gadou had a nice glass of Cabernet Sauvignon, he might chill out a bit?
I mean, it's possible, but I'm going to have to come to his defence a little bit. All he said was that the team selection wasn't up to him, which is true. He sees this as his year to do well at the Tour de France, and is somebody who's just done the Giro and is just sort of on a last year's victory tour the best option for him as a helper? I don't know. So maybe he does have a point. I mean, maybe he could handle it better. I don't know.
I totally agree. I think
not like Badu handle something.
I'm coming to his defence here. I feel like
Maddio might like be really milking this Pinot thing, especially with the Netflix presence at the tour. And I think he's just trying. It was already going to be a lot to try and build a team that could both support Godu in the mountains and any kind of lead out for Demar. And now he wants to throw Pino into the mix. We love Pino, we do, of course, but it's a bit loose cannony. I think that if he wants to really get somewhere with that team, he needs to focus a bit.
Yeah, he's just done 3 weeks in Italy. He deserves to put his feet up and spend some time with his goats and chillax for a bit. So I can see why he could see like this is his last chance to the podium. I'm not going to say win.
Because he won't.
Probably not.
Coming from the guy that supports Landa.
Yeah, is it going to be Landa 1-2-3?
Oh, you've missed a trick there, Barman. I've just realised that you should have said Pinot Noir.
Should have done.
Yeah, that's
it's 10 to 10. We'll let you
watch. Opportunity
there.
But to be fair, he said with the Demar situation, it was very beefy. Whereas this
that was
very
buffy,
like,
particularly overdone.
Beef.
That.
I think the beef was implied. Implied birth.
Implied birth.
Like by not saying anything, he was saying everything.
Vegan beef.
Vegan beef.
Beef. Yeah.
Anyway, it's going to be really fun. Whatever happens.
I can't wait. It's going to be brilliant.
FDJ drama.
I mean, I'm looking at the team that they've put on paper. Well, they've got on paper, which isn't really, it's just rumours at the moment.
Yeah.
But at the moment, there currently isn't really any lead out. And there's hardly any mountain support either, so it's going really well.
Oh, that's great.
We've got Stefan Kuhn and Valentin Madelas, who will support Godu admirably.
One for Demar, one for Godu. Yeah. Love.
So we move from Cabernet Sauvignon to Pinot Noir, and I think that's probably time to call it a night, to be honest. Too many red wines for me. So all that's left for us to say goodbye, and we will speak to you soon. It's a goodbye from me, your quizmaster Tom.
And it's goodbye from me, Anna.
Bye.
See you later.